Blog Talk Radio.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. It is Tuesday, January 28th, 2014. And I want to remind everyone to be sure to get their free report, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. So enter your email address at VitalityCapsule.com and get your free report. Okay, tonight's topic is Escape the Gluten-Free Trap. And unfortunately, it really is a trap. And unless you've been under a rock, you have heard that gluten is bad for you, and you should eat gluten-free. And tonight I'm going to talk about what is gluten sensitivity, what does it mean to eat gluten-free, why would you want to, and what happens to people who eat gluten-free? What are the traps that they can fall into? And, of course, how to avoid those habits. Now, I first heard about gluten-related disease. I was in medical school. In other words, I was 22 years old. I had never met or even heard of anyone who was sensitive to gluten or had a digestive problem of any kind. It was just unheard of. My uncles used to buy six packs of Coke just to watch his kids drink it. You know, just nobody, everyone had a really tough, cast iron stomach. And if someone even mentioned being nauseated, why, we would just say they had a weak stomach. It was like a serious factory defect from birth, like, what's wrong with you? Get it together. And so, you know, when I grew up, which was in the 50s and 60s, any kind of ailment was immediately referred to having an emotional or constitutional problem that you could just pull yourself together and it would go away. And so when I got to medical school, I mentioned there was something called tropical sprue or celiac disease, and that it was related to eating gluten and people could get rid of it, and one way of treating it was, of course, to not eat wheat. I said, oh, my gosh, how unfortunate, how, you know, amazing to have that limitation. And so it was something that was portrayed as being extremely rare. It didn't affect very many people. And, of course, there's a special test you could do to determine if somebody did indeed have celiac disease. And so, of course, to a naive 22-year-old with a very simple mind, I said, well, duh, why can't they just stop eating wheat? Why do they need to be tested before they can stop eating wheat? So I had no idea of the deeper psychological of course, we're training the doctors to believe patients can't take action without doctors. Something to get patients to believe the same thing. So I totally missed that psychological power play. And so in my simple 22-year-old mind, I thought, look, I don't need to worry about this disease because it's easy. People can just stop eating wheat. No need to do any testing. But that was not what was taught in medical school. It was taught in medical school was to test tesamorin only if the person was positive for gluten sensitivity could you be justified in telling them to not eat wheat. Now, there's a thought, I've got to jump ahead here, about genetic modification playing a role in gluten sensitivity. I'd like to say probably not, because the first GMO wheat was released in 2014, or will be released soon in 2014. So GMO wheat as a possible source of gluten sensitivity is not really an option. Now, let's go more into what they told me in medical school, because I don't think it's what they told the public or what they're telling the public right now. Because I went online and checked it out, and they've changed their tune a bit. But way back when, in medical school, I was told that there is something called trospium. Now, what the heck is tropical sprue? Well, tropical sprue is a disease people get when they travel to the tropics. They develop this condition called tropical sprue, and when they come back to the United States, they are unable to eat any gluten at all. Because if you don't know what gluten is something contained in wheat, rye, and barley, for the most part. And things containing those ingredients can cause incredible allergic reactions, swelling, rashes, bloating, pain, bizarre behavior in people who have gluten sensitivity. So people don't want to take gluten if they have celiac disease. And so a diagnosis of tropical sprue can be complicated because many diseases have similar symptoms. And so the following investigation results are suggested. So abnormal flattening of the villi. Now, wait a minute. The only way to find abnormal flattening of the villi in a person who's still alive is to subject them to anesthesia and passing a tube down their throat into their belly to take a look. Basically, a multi-thousand-dollar diagnostic procedure. And there might be inflammatory cells or lymphocytes, and you can only tell that by a biopsy of the small intestine, which, of course, is another few hundred dollars. And then, of course, you could do blood tests showing low levels of vitamin A, B12, E, D, and K. Now, this is important. Whenever there's a low level of vitamins, like A, B, E, D, in somebody who's eating food, you've got two things going on. One, malabsorption. They're not absorbing the nutrients. And they cannot absorb the nutrients for two reasons. One, their villi are flattened, as mentioned previously. In other words, their equipment for absorption is destroyed. Or two, there's a parasite present. And, of course, the parasite can destroy the absorption equipment as well as eat the nutrients itself. And also, a person who has tropical sprue can have a low serum albumin, that's proteins, low calcium, and revealed, of course, by blood tests, and excess fat in the feces, and a thickened small bowel fold seen on bare swallow. Okay, so these tests, we've just run through approximately that worth of tests in order to diagnose tropical sprue. Now, they're saying it's limited to within about 30 degrees north and south of the equator. That is it. So if somebody resides outside of that geographical region, recent travel to the region is a key factor in diagnosing this disease. So in other words, if they have all these symptoms and they haven't recently traveled to a tropical region, then it can't possibly be tropical sprue. This is an important part of the reasoning medical process to understand. So it can look like a duck, walk like a duck, quack like a duck, but it's not a duck because it's found in the wrong time. Okay. So what else do we know about tropical sprue? Well, Medline helps us out a little bit with this. And they say tropical sprue is causes malabsorption, and the cause is not known, but it's been suggested that it is caused by bacterial, viral, amoebal, or parasitic infection. And rancid fat has been suggested as a possible cause. So if you go to tropics and eat rancid fat, and I live in the tropics, I can tell you there's lots of rancid fat around here, then you could get tropical spirit. Now, I would like to also say that, living here in the tropics, I'm absolutely shocked, totally shocked and amazed of all the panaderias, that's Spanish for bakeries. I mean, every three blocks there is a bakery. And every Panamanian in town eats wheat all day long. And I do not know, I'm sure there are, but I do not know of a single Panamanian here who has gluten sensitivity, because they all eat the stuff, lots of it. In fact, the only market for gluten-free products down here is the recently arrived Americanos, or gringos. So the idea that tropical sprue is frequent in the tropics is certainly not supported by my observation living here. By the way, I would recommend anyone and everyone live outside the United States. It'll give you a chance to really test a lot of things you've been told about places outside the United States. Anyway, back to the subject here. So what they're saying then is they think it might be caused by parasites. Now, this is interesting and is actually supported by the fact that people who travel to a tropical area and go back to the States end up getting these symptoms. So we've got tropical sprue, which is definitely, circumstantially speaking, definitely caused by a parasite. And so what's the treatment? Once diagnosed, tropical sprue can be treated by a course of the antibiotic tetracycline or sulfamethoxazole trimethoprim for 3 to 6 months, as well as supplementation of B12 and folic acid. Now, we can already put up our BS detectors right here. If you listen to my Lyme talk, and if you have Lyme disease, or if you know of anyone who does have Lyme disease, then you know that long-term antibiotics are not a very good solution to just about anything. And so this is a solution that we are given to tropical sprue, and they're saying, but wait. There is another condition called celiac disease, which has a similar symptom to tropical sprue, the flattening of the villi, the small intestine inflammation, but it is caused by an autoimmune disorder triggered by digestive gluten. Now, get this. We have two things identical. Tropical sprue, celiac disease, identical symptoms. But one of them is attributed to parasites. Another one is attributed to an autoimmune disease. In other words, your immune system, usually through maybe heredity or something, is defective. So we have two diseases that look absolutely identical, and the cause is being attributed differently. This is by the medical profession. And they concede that when you go down there at the endoscope, you look at the villi, they look exactly the same. You cannot tell the difference. We'll take a little station break here. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniel on the Rainbow Soul Channel at BlakeRadio.com. And be sure to get your free report, Natural Remedies, So Powerful, It Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. So enter your email address at VitalityCapsules.com to get your very important free report. So we've got these two identical diseases with different causes. So these two identical diseases, tropical sprue and celiac disease, absolutely identical, indistinguishable by symptoms or by endoscopy or by microscopic exam. So one's caused by a parasite, and you can pick it up when you eat bad food while you're traveling. Another one is celiac disease caused by an autoimmune disorder, and you just kind of have it fall out of the sky. Okay. Now, I sat there in medical school. I listened to this lecture that I got in medical school explaining this to me. And you might imagine I was totally confused. But I was under the influence of being sleep deprived for 90 hours. So it took me a while to sort this out. And all I could figure out back in 1983, year of our Lord, was that wheat was not a health product. All I could figure out. That was as complicated as it got. Now, they go on to say that you can prevent tropical sprue by using only a bottle of water for drinking, brushing your teeth, and washing food, and avoiding fruits that are washed with tap water, or consuming only peeled fruits like bananas and oranges. And they say the prognosis for tropical sprue is absolutely excellent. It does not recur in patients who get it during travel to affected areas, and the occurrence rate for natives is about 20%. Now, I would just like to say that the natives here in Panama take a special powdered concoction once a month to get rid of any and all parasites that they may or may not have. And so that is a big, big clue. So I left medical school, and I had this in my mind that this is a very rare condition called gluten sensitivity, characterized by celiac disease. And not many people had it, and those that do are just frail people. Then I went to the Indian Reservation. In the Indian Reservation, I was charged with the responsibility of setting up a diabetes clinic. And so it's a very elaborate kind of thing. They want me to refer everyone to the dietitian, and we didn't really have a dietitian yet. I said, well, let me wade into this and do the best I can. So I said, let me make a list of foods for these diabetics to eat. And at the time, I was 5'10" and 227 pounds, so I was pretty slender. And so I said, well, why don't I make a list of foods that they can eat all they want of? Because I never measure my food. I eat all I want, and I'm not fat, and I don't have diabetes. Can we give them the same kind of program that they can follow up without restriction? So I made a list of all the foods they can eat all they want of. And I said, oh, and I know that wheat is not healthy, so I'm going to leave it off the list. I left wheat off the list. And didn't the blood sugars fall? I didn't link it to cutting back the wheat exactly, but it worked out very well. So then I entered regular practice in my own private medical practice, and I had patients that came in with autoimmune diseases, all kinds of just outrageously awful things that were supposedly incurable according to medical school criteria, what I'd been taught. So I said, okay, we've got this ideal healing diet, and you're not going to have any wheat. Just cut the wheat out of it, no wheat at all. Some brown rice or black rice or red rice or have a potato or some kind of root starch, but no wheat. Oh, my God. Miraculous healing occurred. It was just incredible. Absolutely amazing. Even took my own family off of wheat. No wheat for the kids. So people ask me, well, Dr. Daniels, what does it mean to be gluten-free? I said, well, to be gluten-free, you don't eat any wheat, rye, oats, and barley, and, you eat the other stuff, like vegetables and stuff. And people would ask, well, Dr. Daniels, what about mustard? I said, oh, mustard is fine. No problem with mustard. And what about soy sauce? I said, well, I'm not sure about soy sauce. That sounds pretty good to me. Ho, 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 ho. Guess what? Go get your yellow mustard bottle and look at the ingredients. You will not see wheat listed as an ingredient, even though there is gluten, there is white flour in your yellow mustard. It is the thickening agent. Why it's not listed anywhere on the container, I do not know, but it's in there. And your soy sauce. Most soy sauce has wheat in it. Now, sometimes you can find wheat in the very small print on a soy sauce bottle. And then, even smaller print, because you have super, super duper eyes, on the rice milk container. Rice milk has some wheat in it as a thickener. So people who are seriously gluten-free have this treacherous time of things because so many things are laced with gluten and actually are not labeled. Now, I took people off of meat and dairy as well. What does that mean? Well, a lot of meat now are laced with wheat as a filler. So if it's a sausage, for example, or if it's hamburger, these things are laced with or mixed with a starch filler. So if you're gluten-free, I should say gluten-free, gluten-sensitive, and trying to be gluten-free, it's very, very difficult. So just a tip for people who are going to go gluten-free, don't eat anything that you didn't fix or prepare yourself. And, you know, stay away from totally any processed food at all. Even make your own condiment. Make your own mustard. It's just you soak the vinegar and the mustard seed overnight. I soak them for 2 days. You put them in a blender with some a couple of raisins and some salt and some water, and boom, you've got mustard. Shocking. And it even thickens up. So that was the gluten-free eye five. But what did my patients do? Of course, they did not, they didn't look at things the same way I did. They did not look at things the same way I did at all. They felt that gluten-free was, well, gluten-free according to the store. And if it was in a store, it had a label on it, said gluten-free, why, golly geez, that's what it was. It was gluten-free. So let's take a look at what gluten-free is that you can get in the store. Now I'm going to read you some ingredients on some products. These are gluten-free products. And this, I'm not going to name the brand, but they're all very similar, so it doesn't really matter. Tapioca and potato starch. Okay, we have a highly, highly refined products here. Brown rice flour, modified tapioca starch, water, vegetable oil. The thing is not genetically modified, but they have canola oil, which is irradiated and does destroy the DNA, partly of the canola. So the DNA of the canola oil is always impacted. Or sunflower or safflower oil. Egg whites. That means not the egg yolk, in other words, so you don't have a whole food. Tapioca, maltodextrin, which is sugar. Evaporated cane juice, which is sugar. Tapioca syrup, which is more sugar. And yeast, which likes to eat the sugar. So you see where we're going here. You're getting a pretty big yeast, inflaming yeast infection if you're going to eat this gluten-free product here. Xanthan gum, another processed substance. Salt, of course, and baking powder, which is, their baking powder is sodium and pyrophosphate, sodium bicarbonate, cornstarch, monocalcium phosphate. Now, all these phosphates dissolve bones and give you osteoporosis. And then cultured corn syrup solids, more sugar, which is a natural mold inhibitor, they say. And, of course, enzymes. Now, this is clearly not a health product, but this is a high-end gluten-free white sandwich bread, which sells for $5 for 12 ounces. Let's try another item. How about chocolate chip cookies? Ingredients, dried cane syrup, which is known as sugar. Chocolate chips, which whose first ingredient is sugar, so that's more sugar. Brown rice flour, tapioca starch, butter, whole egg, potato starch, dry molasses, vanilla extract, salt, xanthan gum, and baking soda. Believe it or not, this is not so bad. This just has a lot of sugar in it and some eggs and butter. You could probably survive these. The last one is the sugar and the yeast. That was a bad combination. Now, what about pizza? Let's say you want gluten-free pizza. This is interesting. So you get pizza crust, which is brown rice flour, rice starch, potato starch, olive oil, dried cane syrup, no sugar here, and lots of, again, there's lots of starches here that are highly, highly refined. Tapioca starch, yeast, salt, xanthan gum, calcium sulfate, added for freshness, hope you're not sensitive to sulfates or sulfites. Pizza sauce, which is tomato puree, tomato paste, and water. Then there's more sugar, salt, more olive oil, and canola oil. Why would you need two oils? I don't know. But canola oil is definitely not a health product. I mean, canola oil contributes to arthritis, visual problems. It's a bad actor. Granulated garlic, spices, citric acid, low moisture mozzarella cheese. Now, spices is a really gray area. Spices can be anything. It could be monosodium glutamate. You just don't know. Cheese cultures, salt enzymes, more mozzarella, more enzymes, more cheese, and basil, and more spices. If the second spices are not the same as the first spices, that's another red flag. And so what we're trying to hear is these gluten-free products are filled with a lot of, well, filler. And a lot of things, we just don't know what they are, and a lot of things that actually lead to other conditions. For example, it's, you know, frequently people who eat a heavy diet of gluten-free products will end up going on to get diabetes and other different conditions. Here's my favorite, Snickerdoodles. Dried cane syrup, which is sugar, tapioca starch, a filler, brown rice flour, butter, whole eggs, potato starch, cinnamon, vanilla extract, salt, xanthan gum, baking soda, and non-GMO canola oil. Again, an oxymoron, because canola oil is by definition irradiated, and radiation by definition destroys and damages and alters DNA. So, you know, I did a test when I was in practice. I went to the grocery store, and I just filled my cart with all this gluten-free stuff. I said to the kids, okay, kids, we're going to try all this gluten-free stuff. So I took one cookie from each package, or one something from each package, and I promptly felt absolutely lousy. And my kids ate that stuff, and they felt pretty lousy, too. I said, I don't think this stuff can, I don't think I can add this to my definition of healthy. So that was my experience in medical practice. So there is this big gluten-free trap that if you ate gluten-free, then you're definitely going to hit a brick wall in terms of eating gluten-free processed foods. So that didn't work. And the other way, which is simply to substitute other starches, other whole unprocessed starches, that works, except, and any person gluten sensitive will tell you, the stuff out there just isn't marked. And so what really happens then is you could buy a ham that was infused with gluten as part of the processing when they squirt the water into the ham. You know, all kinds of stuff. And so it's difficult to get gluten-free food unless, of course, you raise the animal and kill it yourself, you raise the vegetable, cook it yourself, you raise the potato and cook it yourself. In other words, if you buy processed mashed potatoes, they might have gluten in them as a thickener. So things were at this point where it looked pretty bleak. Things were pretty bad. Then, of course, something else happened. I had a patient who was pretty sick. She had psoriasis all over the body. So I told her, look, I really think that being gluten-free would be helpful to you. And so she made the whole family gluten-free. Of course, she did it because of her rash. But her husband's headaches went away, the kid's tummy aches went away. Every member of the family had some vague symptom that they were just putting up with, just enduring, and it turned out it was due to the gluten. And so what's happened then is many people have realized that they may not have a severe gluten sensitivity. The gluten sensitivity is enough that if they quit eating wheat, the quality of their life is just phenomenally better. So, you know, the medical profession has weighed in on this, and they're actually very, very distressed. And so this is what they said as of December 12, 2013. This is Medline. They say, it is not unusual for people to say they feel much better after dropping gluten from their diet, even though they don't have celiac disease. And they went and got a expert on the case to weigh in. And the expert said that what these people describe has come to be called non-celiac gluten sensitivity, or NCGS. And it's a little study diagnosis that has contributed to the growing market for gluten-free products expected to surpass $6.2 billion worldwide by 2018, according to one estimate. And the doctor says NCGS, which is non-celiac gluten sensitivity, is a wildly popular topic in the internet, says Dr. Doug Schneider. There's a lot of discussion, a bit of confusion. Now, what Dr. Schneider is really objecting to is people accessing the cure, which is deleting wheat from their diet, without the permission of a medical authority or a series of $10,000 to $20,000. But there is some understanding. Only 100 worldwide has celiac disease. That means they've gone through the $5,000 to $20,000 in tests and it's come up positive. The only treatment is a gluten-free diet. The only treatment for celiac disease is a gluten-free diet. Now, an identical affliction, which is tropical sprue, can be cured with antibiotics. And as a person living in the tropics, I can tell you that these denizens of the tropics are taking their anti-parasite pack every month at least. And no one I know has any kind of wheat sensitivity. In fact, I would say the average individual down here eats wheat about a pound of wheat a day. Shocking, isn't it? The doctor, good doctor said. He says the only treatment is a gluten-free diet. When someone with celiac disease eats every, even tiny amount of gluten, the immune system attacks the lining of the small intestine, which can lead to malnutrition. And this is the difference between celiac disease and non-celiac gluten sensitivity. And so the doctor, good doctor says, the non-celiac gluten sensitivity could affect as many as 6 out of every 100 people. It is a separate celiac disease, meaning people with one will ever progress to develop the other. Despite the condition's name, gluten may not be the only dietary compound in wheat that leads to gluten sensitivity. And he goes on to say that both conditions, the non-celiac gluten sensitivity and the celiac gluten sensitivity, have bloating, they have pain, fatigue, irritable bowel syndrome. And so what he's saying then is even though the symptoms are absolutely identical, these are two separate conditions, and why? Because celiac disease runs in families, and the non-celiac gluten disease does not run in families. So this is very, very puzzling. So as a person, as a doctor, trying to help patients and trying to make sense of this, I was thoroughly perplexed. And so what I deduced, based on my observation of patients and just the incredible effect that taking them off gluten had, was I determined that the hybridization of gluten, so making these hybrid types of wheat, you know, there's camelot, there's all kinds of hybridized types of wheat, created a sensitivity and converted the wheat and gluten into a foreign substance that the human body no longer recognized, and this was the reason for all these sensitivities. And then, in the mid-90s, entered the organic movement, actually from 1990 onward. And I became aware of this. I said, geez, maybe it's the chemicals in the wheat. Maybe they're using certain chemicals on the wheat that are making the wheat react with people. And so even organic wheat, by the way, still did gluten sensitivity. So the theory was a little bit weak, but, you know, what the heck. The hybridization explains why organic wheat products were not any less damaging than non-organic wheat products. And so then I got to thinking, I said, geez, so that might be it. Now, meanwhile, at the ranch, because I was working on other things at the same time, I had a medical practice, and I was working on this turpentine thing, this fountain of youth thing, this material that I needed to discover that could really turn things around for people longer. So meanwhile, I had discovered turpentine. And many of you who are long-time listeners would be aware that I realized that the deadly dose of turpentine is 30 cc's, and so I'm very fussy about telling people to definitely stick to less than 5 cc's. That way you have a pretty big margin of safety. But one person decided that she would take it upon herself to take a full tablespoon of turpentine. Oh, my gosh. Well, thank God she didn't present that idea to me before she did. She just went ahead and did it. And she felt really awful, absolutely awful, totally and completely awful. She decided she thought she was absolutely going to die, and she went to the emergency room because she thought she was going to die, and I guess she didn't want to die alone. She did not tell them she had taken turpentine because she was too embarrassed. And they observed her overnight and sent her home the next morning because by morning she was fine. And so she went home, and she felt pretty good. And even though she was gluten sensitive, she would occasionally eat gluten. That was her custom. And she ate gluten, and she was no longer gluten sensitive. Boom. Vamoose. Very, very interesting. So she decided she'd give me a call and tell me about her little experiment. She called me. She told me about her experiment. Said, oh, my God, that is so interesting. And so this actually helped clear up this confusion that this nutritional expert, or Dr. Seidner, this medical expert sense is a bit of confusion. So let's figure this out. Oh, by the way, we'll be taking questions in a minute, so, you know, click your buttons and we'll answer questions. So, explaining this, we have three conditions with identical symptoms and no identified cause. There's tropical sprue, non-tropical sprue, or celiac disease, and non-celiac gluten sensitivity. And so it seems pretty clear that all of these are a variation of an infection in the when the person is this organism says, woo, I'm excited, and gives that person a real kick in the pants and a lot of symptoms. And so it seems that, of course, being gluten-free has become a new virtue, major virtue. I mean, to be able to stand up in a crowd and say, I am gluten-free, really gives you a lot of cachet, I think. But then I'm living overseas among a bunch of other expats, and if you're gluten-free, it's like everyone's very proud and impressed with you. So, but all that aside, it appears that the infectious tropical sprue is the same as the celiac disease, which is the same as the non-celiac gluten sensitivity. But all of these are caused by an organism that is literally nibbling away at the person, and when the person does not eat gluten, this organism nibbles a little slower, and when the person eats gluten, this organism nibbles quickly, and that would explain the bloating, because bloating is gas, and gas is a side effect of parasites. When they eat your food, they create gas. Boom. And so that's the tip-off that these gluten sensitivities actually an occult, we'll call it occult or hidden, parasite that is literally eating your gluten and getting a tremendous charge out of it when it does and making people very, very uncomfortable. We'll take a pause for space identification. You are listening to Healing with Dr. Daniel on the Rainbow Soul channel at lakeradio.com. Be sure to get your free report, Natural Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. So enter your email address at vitalitycapsules.com. There's always conflicting findings. This is very important in medicine, that there are conflicting findings, because the fact that there's conflicting findings in medicine means you can justify anything. And whenever there's a study that proves one thing, they always make sure there's another study produced that shows the opposite. And so gluten studies are no different. So let's take a look at our gluten studies. There are only three published studies to refute or support the diagnosis of non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Why would you have to refute or support this diagnosis? I have no clue, unless it's a billing problem, but it's a diagnosis most people easily make on their own without bothering the doctor, but at any rate. So Italian doctors who published a study last year, I guess that would be 2013, of 920 of their patients concluded that some people who don't have celiac disease are indeed sensitive to wheat, but some were sensitive to multiple foods as well as wheat, the researcher said. Okay, so there's still some. So that's one study which shows that there are people who are sensitive to wheat but don't have gluten, don't have celiac disease. Whatever that means. Because all celiac disease means is that the anatomical or biochemical process has progressed to the point where certain markers are produced. The two other studies were done by a team of Australian scientists, and they reached two different conclusions. That means that one of those studies decided that there was gluten sensitivity, and one decided it wasn't. So the total three studies, two came out in favor of the concept of non-celiac gluten sensitivity, and one came out against it. But if you are sensitive to gluten, you don't need a doctor in a study to tell you about it. So, the summary then is that gluten sensitivity, this gluten sensitivity which is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and spreading and spreading and spreading and more people have it, that is not the pattern of a genetic problem. And that is not a pattern of a necessarily a food problem. but it is certainly a pattern of a chronic low-grade infection that can be transmitted. And the question only is, how is it being transmitted? I have not figured that out yet. Certainly here in the tropics, we believe it's transmitted by water, but still, there's not any good feeling on that, that water is the mode of transmission. And down here in the tropics, I mean, we believe anything can be transmitted by water. So personally, I don't even drink the water. I have a filter, a filtration system. But for people who are already afflicted with gluten sensitivity, I think it's worthwhile to, you know, pursue an anti-parasite-type remedy. Now, another thing that is curious is if you live in a developed country like, say, the United States, it's considered an autoimmune situation, which means perpetual drugs for life. Don't ever cure it. But if you're in the tropics, where most of the tropical countries are fairly poor, they're going to say, well, you know, take some antibiotics or take some herbs and just get rid of this thing. Get out of here. We don't want to see you. We're not even going to do any tests on you because, of course, you don't have any money and it's not profitable, which actually is not profitable. The test revenues down here are very, very low. The MRI scan, which is like $1,000 to $10,000 in the States, is about $200 down here. So we have a question in the chat room. By the way, if people want to ask a question and they're online, they can click their question button and I'll answer the question. All right, so somebody in the chat room says, why do you think that celiac is transmissible? I think celiac is transmissible because people can get it by traveling to a geographic area and then traveling back. And so the fact that it can be acquired abruptly during a person's lifetime suggests that it's an infectious type agent. Now, there is another possibility, which is could be caused by acute poisoning. But the acute poisoning theory doesn't really hold when you observe that high-dose turpentine takes care of it. And so I've had at least two people tell me their gluten sensitivity has gone away once they've taken turpentine. So that leads me to believe that it does have an infectious etiology. Okay, my chat room is laughing at the idea of a $200 MRI. Let's see if we have other questions. Oh, the audio is not good. Let's take a look at the audio. Nope. Okay, audio's up. Okay, now, some people are you know, suggesting that maybe gluten sensitivity is transferred in the immunizations. That's a possibility because it's transmitted some kind of way in some kind of practice that's very wide culturally. I think it's also a possibility that the water supply in the United States is simply not being filtered and not being maintained. That is certainly the case. One thing I did with all of my patients is I took them off tap water. That was just immediate. Absolutely do not drink tap water. You know, drinking tap water is, I mean, if you're concerned about your health, drinking tap water is a bad idea. You're just working against your objective. So what do you do if you're living in the United States and you're concerned about not becoming gluten sensitive? Let's just say you're not already gluten sensitive. If you don't want to become gluten sensitive, then definitely don't drink the water. You know, use a filtration system. And a carbon filter is not enough. So a carbon filter plus a ceramic filter would probably do the trick. I think it's unfortunate that once they decided that the tropical sprue was infectious, that the research kind of stopped there and no one went deeper to say, hey, which organism do we think is causing this? Although they do seem to be leaning more towards amoebas, that's good news because amoebas are relatively large and your ceramic filter will definitely filter out an amoeba. So that's one thing, filtered water. The next thing is definitely wash your vegetables very well. And even beyond washing them is to soak them in a vinegar water solution. You can use white vinegar for this purpose. You don't have to use the fancy, schmancy organic apple cider vinegar that's unfiltered. So the mix is about a quarter cup of apple cider vinegar to a gallon of water. I won't say apple cider, I'm sorry, white vinegar will do. And you just soak your vegetables in there for about 15 minutes. It's a lot of trouble, but it definitely gets rid of the parasites. And after you do it a couple of times, you're going to be shocked to see these organisms just rolling out of your lettuce and other vegetables. So you're not drinking the water. You're disinfecting your vegetables, your meats. If you're going to eat meats, cook them thoroughly. Yes, this goes totally against the desire to partly cook meat so it'll be tender or taste better. But definitely you need to thoroughly cook your vegetables, your meats, so you don't get the problem. Now, some people say, well, doctor, can't I just eat a cut of meat like filet mignon and just make sure the outside is seared perfectly, whatever? The answer is no, because the amoeba potentially can be throughout the fabric and fiber of the muscle or meat if the animal had this affliction before it died, which, of course, nobody knows. So, yes, you can sear the outside of your meat, but no, I don't think that that would solve the problem. So the important thing then is so you're not drinking the tap water. You're soaking and disinfecting your vegetables in a tasty way with vinegar, and you're cooking your meat thoroughly. And that is pretty much what you can do to avoid the problem. And if you already have the problem, then you should take those preventative measures. Because what's going to happen with those preventative measures is you're going to be introducing into your system food that is not contaminated and therefore can't keep the cycle going. The same way you take, some people might take probiotics every day to keep that probiotic population up. It's the same with the bad guys. If you continually bring them in every day, then your immune system can't heal you. It can't do what it's got to do to make you better. So you definitely need to, if you are suffering with gluten sensitivity, to cut back on those things. The next thing as a person with gluten sensitivity is, clean yourself out. And that, well, what do I mean by that? I mean, empty your intestines. Just have 3 bowel movements a day. And clear out the intestines. Because that's where this organism is hiding, or I should say sitting in plain sight. And when you eat gluten, it eats first, and it makes gas and just makes you totally miserable. So you have to poop regularly. If you already have something like celiac disease where you're having frequent bowel movements, or irritable bowel where you have frequent bowel movements, then add a little charcoal to the mix. The charcoal acts like a whiffle ball, sucks up these bad actors, and gives you some comfort while your system is clearing it. And finally, have some turpentine. And you can email Gabriel at support@vitalitycapsules.com and tell you want to get the turpentine document, and she'll help you out with that. Okay, so lots of questions here in the chat room, so I'll answer a few of those. Those of you on the line, if you have questions, just click I think it's number 1, and it raises your hand, and I can answer your question. Okay, so this person says, why is gluten not toxic to them as an individual? And the answer would be because they don't have the parasite that's eating the gluten and causing gluten sensitivity. And then someone else said that they're not going to poop 3 times a day. That's a lot of action. I have definitely heard that before. I'm telling you, I have had patients say, Dr. Daniel, 3 poops a day is absolutely obscene. But I'm telling you, if you have gluten sensitivity, it may be a sacrifice that you have to make to turn things around. Because if any gluten sensitive person can tell you, gluten is everywhere. It's almost impossible to avoid. Okay, here we go. Questions from our radio. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. My name is Chris. How are you?
Hi, Tris. I'm fine.
Hello? Okay, I'm calling
you.
Yes,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I have a granddaughter. She's 11. She's autistic.
Mm-hmm.
She suffers with constipation,
mm-hmm.
and now she has, like, she had a bad, dandruff, but I think it's not dandruff, because it's in her scalp. Her hair is falling out, and...
Mm-hmm.
And that's that, you know. I don't know what to,
now
you know, really what to do.
Now, she sensitive, or did you guys work into that?
I told her mother, she lives with her mother in, you know, a different state, and I told her mother, and the mother said, you know, it's difficult doing this, it's difficult doing that, but I told her to try to not give her sugar and, you know, like, different wheat, you know, but you know, I don't know. I don't think that she changed the diet, and I'm constantly telling her don't eat the sugar, and even she knows that. My granddaughter tells her, no, I can't eat that, you know. The, you know, so she'll tell her mother, you know, sometimes that she can't eat such a thing, but she has her scalp is like it's an itchy scalp. Her hair's falling out, and she has a bad dandruff. Yeah, that's what it looks like, dandruff. But it's so well. The last time I seen it, it was so bad that like you could grease her scalp, and as soon as you grease it, it starts flaking.
Okay, got it. So your question: what to do about her constipation?
Constipation and her scalp.
Okay, all right, great. I'll answer that for you. All right, constipation. Well, everybody knows Vitality Capsules for sure. Unfortunately, they are temporarily out of stock. We expect them back in March. But you've got to get her bowels moving. She's 11 years old. She probably likes sweet stuff. So you can boil up some prunes with lemon juice and cinnamon stick and simmer that down. It'll taste a lot like lemonade. And she can eat those, and that should get some pretty good action. You know, give her a pretty big bowl, like two or three cups of that. That would be one way to get her going. And I can appreciate it's difficult to change a diet. For an 11-year-old, the only way to make a dietary change would be for the whole family to do that. And I think what your daughter might be saying is that she doesn't personally want to change her diet. So it sounds like this child is actually willing. So I would say the thing to do would be to educate the child, not the mother, and, you know, let the child know what foods to avoid, and you might actually get some pretty good progress on that. I think that would be a good way to go. Okay, so Uncle Rick wants to know, what herbs are in Vitality Capsules? Well, Vitality Capsules have senna in there, which gives it some contraction, helps your intestines contract. It has garlic, which helps kill a few parasites. Aloe, which strengthens and repairs the intestines. Barberry and Cascara Sagrada, which get the bile to flow from the liver and strengthen the liver and help clear the small intestine, which, by the way, is where this organism lives. We know it lives in the small intestine. That's been pretty much all the authorities on the matter agree that that's where things hang out. Now, in the old formulation of Vitality Capsules, there was cayenne pepper, but I found that modern tummies don't seem to be tolerating that very well. So I've substituted turmeric, which helps bring more stuff to the liver so it can empty, and cloves, which are a very powerful healing antioxidant herb. And, of course, there's ginger, which helps tonify the stomach. And those are all the ingredients in the Vitality Capsules, and those will be available in March. Okay, so we have a skin specialist here who says that his kids often would need to be oiled up to keep from getting their skin ashy. Yes, March is a very long time, but unfortunately these companies have a delay time. All right, so we got to figure out what next week's topic is. And I shouldn't have to look for next week's topic because there's so many places I could have next week's topic. Next week's topic is, if healthcare is so healthy, how come there's such a huge industry dedicated to making it safer? So next week, I'm going to go through all of the organizations that exist trying to make healthcare safer. And it's a huge issue. And, of course, some of them have deteriorated to just trying to improve patient satisfaction so patients will feel better about being murdered. But so that's next week's topic is, if medicine is so safe, how come there's so many corporations dedicated to making it safer? And I think that's worth thinking about. And I'll discuss a few of these organizations, what they do, and the telltale signs that things are every bit as bad, maybe even worse than we think. ABCD. Okay, if there's one more question, I can handle one more question. If not, then I will play our exit music. I forgot to do our disclaimer, so anything you hear tonight is definitely not medical advice. It's up to you how you decide to use it, and any way that you do use it will be totally your responsibility, not the responsibility of the station or myself or my staff or anyone else I might know. Okay, it's been wonderful having you this evening, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.